So, Mark, here's something that this pilot didn't know, and you might not have known and might not have checked, but from the comfort of my desktop, I did. According to Google Maps, Gillespie is all of 10 minutes further for your friend to drive to come get you than Montgomery Field. If you had known that in making the choice, would it change the choice for you? Or would you stick with your choice of landing on the dark runway?
Well, I certainly didn't know that in advance, and I don't think this pilot did. If they didn't know there were no lights on 2A left, they wouldn't have known that how far this was for his friend to travel. The other thing is that, you know, we talk about the embarrassment of having to call the friend, and that's really, in my mind, an extremely minor consideration to begin with. I really don't care. I think the only embarrassment isn't the 10-minute extra drive. The embarrassment is, well, I said I was going to land here and I wasn't able to. If he's a non-pilot, he might not understand that. And that's really the only issue in there for me.
Paul, you're landing on the closed runway at your own risk. Why?
First of all, I'm changing my mind to 5 now that I know that it's only 10 minutes. And I'm accusing you of throwing a nasty curveball. But I will address my choice of number 2, because I'm assuming I don't know that, correct?
Absolutely fair game there. You're in this pilot's seat, and this pilot does not know how close it is. And it sure looks worse on the sectional, and it's California.
Well, I picked 2. I originally thought 1 would be the better choice, but then I went with 2 when I saw the image of the 2 runways side by side. So I view the risk reward as just about equivalent, because the risk to me visually of that unlighted runway, you got to pick it out of the blackness here. You got the synthetic vision to help, and hopefully you got a good landing light and you can frame it with the taxiway lights and stuff. You could sort of get there until the landing light can see it, maybe. But in this case, he's overflown 2-8 right, so he's got a good look at it. And the key thing here, and I think the indicator, and this really reveals my cynicism, this shows the stinking heap that the NOTAM system is. Somebody forgot to check a box somewhere, then that runway is not NOTAMed open because somebody didn't do something. But the fact that it's open for taxiing tells you that the runway is clear. And the own risk doesn't deter me at all, because that is just pure CYA. It's just a standard ATC phraseology when they can't officially clear you for whatever you've asked for. So I think I would take 2-8 right. It's got good lighting, chances of a better landing. It's easier to taxi off of, just altogether chances of a better outcome. And I don't think I think the risk of something unseen there is virtually nil.
Bob.
I'm looking at it from a different angle. An aircraft owner most likely doesn't know what his insurance policy says about landing on unlit runways or landing at your own risk. And that sort of knocks out 2A right for me, and also landing on 2A left with no lights. So I go to the next obvious solution to me, which is San Diego International, because I'm really not sure about Gillespie, where exactly that airport is and what the services are, what the hours are, et cetera. Now, there's 2 FBOs at San Diego International.
Catherine.
Yeah, I think the clear choice here is just to continue to land on runway 2-8 left. It's not different from landing at most uncontrolled airfields in the country that have, you know, maybe a paucity of lights. Also, there's also the option of a go-around. If things don't look good on that first approach, you can try it again.
We have a couple other people who are landing on 2-8 left on the dark runway, as opposed to this brightly lovely runway just off to the side. I mean, Wally, why would you land this airplane on the dark runway?
I'm 2-8 left landing in the dark. I think all pilots should be able to land their airplane without runway edge lights in place. You've got a big landing light in this airplane, and certainly that should be part of your training, even though this pilot didn't practice that in his renewing his qualifications. I think that skill should be there. It's not that hard. frankly. And I think the risk of landing on that runway that's NOTAM closed, I think Paul's probably right. It's probably an administrative error, but they could have left a wheelbarrow out there or something. And if you were taxiing on it, probably you'd see the wheelbarrow and not run into it. If you're landing, you may or may not be able to avoid some obstacle or something out there. So landing on 28 left is, I think, a pretty easy task to do with a modern airplane with this kind of a light.
Well, the NOTAM doesn't say caution wheelbarrow. Proof.
And that gets them off the hook, right? If it said it in the NOTAM that the wheelbarrow was there, there you go. But, you know, just a little challenge on that. It's a narrower runway. This is, you know, a 182 pilot's own airplane, but notorious for bending its firewall in the landing. And if something were to happen, isn't it going to come back on the pilot? Like, what were you doing? You were landing on a dark runway. I don't care that tower cleared you. You were landing in the dark. Isn't this pilot kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't on any runway that's at this airport? If it goes right, no problem. If it goes wrong, it's your fault for landing on a closed runway. You land on the dark runway, it goes right, no one cares. It goes wrong, what were you doing landing on a dark runway?
Mark. For me, I really think that landing on the dark runway is no big deal. Interestingly, about 3 months before I got this scenario, I did my first night flight in 5 years. And I went to another airport nearby, which happens to have the lowest intensity runway lights I have ever seen. So essentially, it was an REIL and then something that was dimmer than the taxiway lights. And, you know, it was no big deal, even after 5 years of not flying at all at night. Get it lined up, landing light illuminates the pavement, and you land. And it really is no big deal.
How much does the avionics factor into people's decision here? I mean, we have synthetic vision, which Mark has said, you know, you don't want to use that necessarily for the landing, but it certainly provides a level of confidence. We have the, you know, potential for approaches and anything, I suppose, in this airplane too. How much of that is a factor? Does it improve things for you? How would you use it even? Elaine?
If you're unfamiliar with the airport, it certainly helps with having a stabilized approach and making sure that you are indeed lined up with the runway, that there's not like an unseen wind shear or something pushing you. Of course, it would help on the final approach. And then I agree with the rest that if you have a good landing light and the ability to go around if something doesn't seem right, this is definitely workable.
Would you bother to go all the way back out and load, say, a visual approach if the avionics had one of those and follow a glide path to this runway if you were, or is it just like, you know, it's just don't overthink it. Like you can just land. Would anybody bother to go back around, Wally?
Even if you had a visual approach, I think I'd make a traffic pattern. Maybe I'd make it just a little bit bigger than normal and you can intercept the extended final approach fix and, or correction, the extended final approach line and the visual glide slope that would be displayed. So I think you just make a traffic pattern. That's what we do most of the time.
But just to be clear, this wouldn't change it for you. If this was an old 182, dim lights inside and no GPS or anything like that, you're definitely still landing in the dark.
Yes, I think it's fine. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and I got to say, I would be on the same boat there. I think I would land in the dark. But it would be tempting to land on that other runway. Bob?
Well, the unlit runway, I think, is 3,400 feet long. I believe that's the length. And you can't see the end. You don't know where the end is. So that makes me a little uncomfortable from the standpoint of actually doing it.
That's true. It's 3,400 feet long, 60 feet wide, as opposed to the lit runway, which would give you, looks like with the displaced threshold, it's about the same length, but 150 feet wide. So a lot more room for error, and you've got all the lights on it. How would you go about that if you were landing on the darkened runway? Is there, you know, Mark, you had said you'd use the peripheral lights to help judge the flare and things like that. Is there anything different, or is this really just a matter for this pilot of, like, don't change anything, just trust that the runway will appear out of the miasma of darkness and it'll all be good?
Well, he's already landed at night a number of times in preparation for this. And really, for me, once you are at flare altitude, the runway lights on the sides don't really do anything anymore for you. It's really all about the landing lights. So the fact that he was able to make 7 successful landings using only his landing light as his real measurement for how high he was, it's really just another normal landing.
Catherine.
Yeah, I agree completely. And in terms of where it ends the same place that 28 right ends. So he could always use that indicator.
Let's talk a little bit about the whole legality of landing on the closed runway, or like I said, even the unlit runway. Go back to Paul, who's landing, if you didn't know about Gillespie being so close, landing on the closed runway that has the lights. Would you have any concern after that landing went well? Would you bother to file an ASRS report saying like, yeah, I didn't check and therefore I had to land? Is that kind of thing, do you think, ever going to come back to bite you?
No, because I've been a jailhouse lawyer too long. I know what own risk is. I know why it came into being. And it doesn't necessarily relate to safety and probably doesn't relate to safety. It's just CYA for the federal government because they haven't checked all the boxes to make sure that they can lift this NOTAM or to certify that the runway has met all the standards, but that doesn't mean it's not safe. And Bob had mentioned the insurance, but, you know, insurance companies pay for stupid stuff all the time. They pay owners who destroy airplanes that were 3 years out of annual, and so that wouldn't necessarily be a concern for me.
You ask my favorite question about ASRS reports, and I would file one. And not because I'm concerned about something coming back to bite me, but because I, as the pilot, have now realized, gee, I really should have checked for the runway light configuration after seeing the NOTAM. This is a safety issue. Other people should be hearing about it.
That makes sense because this actually happened to somebody. It was submitted to us and they found themselves in this situation like, what do you mean there are no lights for that runway? We didn't make it up. There's really just one lit runway there. Wally.
I wonder whose risk we're actually landing on anytime we land. You know, the guy says land at your own risk. Isn't that the case on every landing?
Yeah, you've got a good point there. Absolutely. It certainly could be. Going back to practice for this kind of thing, I could see people being reticent to practice this sort of thing for exactly kind of that reason you're saying, Wally. Like, if I go out and I'm landing without my landing light, you know, with my landing light failed, or if I, you know, let the runway lights go off at a uncontrolled airport, or even if I could ask for the runways to be turned off at a towered airport, and then something goes wrong, isn't that going to come back to bite me, right? So how do people go about this safely, and is there any concern there? Is there a validity to that concern? Because people listening to this might be like, hey, I got to go practice this, but man, that's making me nervous.
Bob. Are you asking whether this is a careless or reckless operation kind of thing?
Could it be come back to bite you as a careless and reckless operation? If it goes wrong the way, if something goes wrong, it always comes back to bite you. Go ahead, Bob.
That's my question. I'm not sure.
Paul?
Yeah, probably could. It probably depends on how jiggy the FISDO inspector is feeling. You know, if you run off a runway and you take out, the runway signs or whatever, I mean, it could be construed as a careless or reckless or in reckless operation. I don't think that it is. I think that's why when I originally described this, I view the risks as almost equal because I don't see landing on a unlit runway with a good landing light as particularly risky.
Mark?
I think the risk of a careless, reckless enforcement is more applicable to 28 right than to 28 left. 28 left is the active runway at the airport at the time. They are being cleared to land for it. If there is a problem on the landing, it's a pilot training issue rather than a violation of something. On the other hand, if you happen to hit that wheelbarrow that was left behind on 28 right, there's your careless reckless of landing on a closed runway. Some people may remember when Senator Inhofe was accused of landing on a closed runway. And in his case, there were X's. there were workmen on the runway that he scared, you know, and all of that stuff. But the actual enforcement against him, which was dropped with some administrative haggling, it wasn't landing on a closed runway. It was careless and reckless and not obeying an instruction not to land there, not obeying the NOTAM, essentially. But it wasn't landing on the closed runway. It was being careless and reckless in terms of endangering other people.
But what we were talking about, not this specific scenario, but in general, if you're going out to practice like at your home airport, maybe you have a runway that one runway is not lit, or maybe they're all not lit, you go out and practice and you have an accident. Could that be construed as careless and or reckless? And I would say, yeah, it might be, depending on the circumstances, even though most of us would say, no, it's not. It's a normal operation.
I think the answer, as with any other activity in aviation that you feel uncomfortable with, is grab an instructor. I mean, we're not there just to give certificates, ratings, flight reviews, and IPCs. We're there for the pilot who feels uncomfortable with the crosswinds, and the big crosswind day comes in and he calls and says, let's go out and practice. And this may be another example of it.
Uncomfortable with night. Get an instructor who's flown at night recently and is comfortable with it for sure. You know, I'm curious, has anyone here intentionally landed on a closed runway? I'm going to say I never have. I've never been in that situation. And nods along the table. Let's change this scenario a little bit here. And since none of us have had to do this, let's suppose it's daytime. If you're coming to Montgomery Gibbs, which has the crossing runway, winds are perfectly aligned with runway 23, say. But now 23 is closed. It's daytime, so the lights aren't the issue. And you're uncomfortable with the idea of taking the crosswind, but you want to land at Montgomery Gibbs. How many people would try the landing at Montgomery Gibbs? How many people would ask if they could open up that closed runway for them? You're feeling uncomfortable?
Sure, I'd be happy to ask them. I mean, they may or may not do it, but it could be a situation where they're working on the end, a couple of men, and the tower could ask those guys to move away for half an hour.
Or maybe it's closed for some administrative reason, and you can say, I'd like to land on risk. That's an option.
You know, we've had other scenarios around the table where there are issues with closed runways and that. What about for takeoff? Would anyone take that as the same thing too? It's a little easier on a takeoff. Would you inconvenience and make the call to the tower? They're like, hey, can I get that closed runway back open for a takeoff?
Well, we used to do that at the airline and frequently, because at times when you're very heavy, you might need a long runway and they're doing some minor repairs, and call them in advance and tell them we need it at 9 o'clock. There's a good chance you'll get it unless they have a lot of equipment out there.
And is it better to, like, you know, hit them extra early? Bob?
Well, many times in NOTAMs for closed runways, it'll be noted that the runway can be opened with, let's say, 15 minutes prior notice. So that would take into account days when they're doing some miscellaneous maintenance along the runway. But there, the NOTAM gives you the indication that the runway can be opened.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the NOTAMs here, because that's one of those things that is a dumpster fire of a system and has been for a long time. And there are certainly efforts to make it better. And apps like 4Flight or Garmin Pilot, I mean, they're like a game changer in many ways, because they'll hopefully search through the NOTAMs and call out things like, hey, this runway is closed. But what this reveals to me, this scenario, is that that's like half the game, right? This pilot actually did get the NOTAM. This pilot did know the runway was closed, but didn't do the next step of running through, okay, if that runway is closed and this sequence of events happens, I get there after dark, what else do I need to be able to land? And we assume a big towered airport's going to have lights on its runway. But as Montgomery Gibbs points out, not all of them do, and not necessarily on all of the runways. Or as Mark said, at a non-towered field, pilot-controlled lighting might be on a different frequency.
So I would have made this mistake. I would not have. I would just assume that it had lighting. I'm sure I would have overlooked it.
Right. And you have a great deal of experience. In fact, I'm curious, Mark, you said that you would have been shocked, right, to see that. Does anyone else seriously think they would have potentially gotten bit by this one?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, just everybody's saying yes. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's out there. But what's great about these kinds of scenarios that we've run through is like that whole concept of what if is how you get around these situations. And, you know, doing the whole planning, doing the planning for what if I can't go in there, and maybe even adding to your planning, like, how far is the drive time for my friend to this other airport? It's a little outside the box, but here it could have turned a stressful situation, into a no-brainer.